and welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us each week on KSKA Anchorage and travel to different spots throughout our community and listen to local groups gathered to discuss what matters to Alaskans.
This week, YWCA Alaska CEO Hillary Morgan and YWCA Alaska's Economic Empowerment Center Coordinator Tamaya Liebersbach host a discussion entitled Closing the Gender Pay Gap, Alaska's Path to Equality. This talk was recorded at Alaska Pacific University on February 19th and has been shortened for broadcast. APU President Don Bantz introduced Hillary Morgan.
Well, let's get started. Good evening. My name is Don Bantz. I'm the president of Alaska Pacific University. And it's my pleasure to welcome you to the APU President's Forum Speaker Series. Please, let's give a warm APU welcome to the CEO of the YWCA, Hillary Morgan.
So I am very excited to be here. This is an amazing forum that's going to start, and I'm looking forward to hearing all of the intellectual debates and conversations that come forth over the next couple of years from this forum. So we're here to talk today about the gender pay gap in Alaska, and I have Tamaya Liebersbach, who is one of our staff at the YWCA, who's taking the lead on this, is going to give you a lot more in-depth information about it. But I thought it might be interesting for people to know sort of how we came about to doing this. And I started at the YWCA in July of 2011. Actually, in April, I was in New York City and was commuting for the first couple of months. And I got asked to go to testify in front of a congressional committee about the issues that are affecting women in Alaska. And most of my career has been in housing and homelessness, so actually I wasn't exactly sure what those issues were, so I Googled what are the issues about women in Alaska. And one of the things that I found, much to my surprise, was that women were still nationally paid 77 cents to a dollar that a man earns. And I remember back in high school, I thought it was 73 cents, so I was very surprised that it was only 77 cents nationally. And then much more to my surprise, I found that in Alaska, women are paid 67 cents to the dollar that a man earns. And this really troubled me, and I spent the next 2 years while I was sort of getting the YWCA up on its feet and in order and sort of financially stable and all the things that a CEO is supposed to do. But I kept coming back to this concept that when I would talk to people about it, the reaction was always the same, which frankly was my reaction at first, which was incredulousness and then denial. And I thought, that can't possibly be true. We have more women CEOs, it seems, of a lot of the Alaska Native corporations have women CEOs. There are a lot of powerful women here, and I met a lot of them as I was doing my woofer class. And it just seemed incredulous. So I started to read a lot of reports and, you know, dug down to the primary sources. And found that indeed this was true, and it was backed by credible sources, by the Department of Labor, our Department of Labor stats, the American Cities Survey, sources that had been tracking this for a while. So on May 24th, 2014, I presented a recommendation to our board of directors, and we decided, the board then voted to eliminate the gender pay gap in Alaska by 2025. We weren't exactly sure how we were going to do that, but as I said, when JFK said he was going to the moon, that's John F. Kennedy for those of you who are too young to remember, he didn't actually know how he was going to get to the moon either, but he knew that he had to say it in order to begin the journey. And so that's what we've done, and over the last 8 months, we have had quite a journey, which Tamaya will talk to you about. And I want to tell you a couple of things that that as we were doing the research, we found two things. One, that anyone who had done this before had really done it using two avenues. One was the legislative avenue, which basically was saying that we would pass legislation to really force people to pay women the same wage as men. And I thought to myself, well, we already have legislation because it passed in 1963. It's called the Fair Pay Act. And that didn't really seem to work. So to keep doing that over and over again didn't seem like a really smart idea. And then the other way that it was done was to basically have a task force or a very high-level prominent people in a community get together and then put the task force under a politician, a mayor or a governor. And then it was the governor's task force or the mayor's task force. And of course, what happened there is that the minute the mayor didn't get reelected or the governor didn't get reelected, the task force fell apart because the motivation was gone. So we decided that we would take this on. The YWCA has been around for 150 years in the country and in the world. And in Alaska, we've been here 26 years. We're not going anywhere. And we decided that we would take the approach of using sort of two ends of the spectrum. One, to educate women and young girls about the gender bias and the nuances of that bias, and also teach them things like salary negotiation and the implications of career choice. And then on the other end, that we would educate presidents, CEOs, and hiring managers of companies and educate them about creating companies that were more gender neutral. And our belief is that as those two move closer together and we have a cultural shift and a community consciousness shift, that is what's going to make the difference. So that's our thought anyway, and in 10 years we'll tell you whether that worked. So those are the two things that we're doing, and then we have four or five outcomes that we're measuring that we have a baseline for now, and we'll do measurements in year 3, 6, 9, and 11. And I am personally really excited about this. The mission of the YWCA is to eliminate racism and to empower women. And we are one of the most logical hostings of this initiative. It is exactly in line with our mission, and we have an amazing board and an amazing staff who are willing to actually do the work that it takes to see this through. What we've done in the last 4 or 5 months has been to create impetus in the community. Two ways are, one, we have created a resolution that we've asked companies to endorse. And the resolution basically just says that we believe there's a problem and we stand with you as we all work to fix it by 2025. And we have companies from all different sectors. APU has endorsed it, the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce, the Anchorage Economic Development Commission, United Way of Anchorage. There's all sorts of different sectors who've endorsed it. And Tamaya has a slide about that will show you the specifics later, as well as some politicians. And the second thing is that we are going to create a survey. We're in the middle of that now. That companies can use to basically superimpose over their wage policies and their personnel policies and to determine whether they are gender neutral. We're going to be completing that survey and beta testing it with three companies in town by the end of June. And then July 1st, 2015, we'll begin to have that administered to another 12 companies throughout the year. And then we're going to begin a list of the best Alaskan companies for working women. So we hope that these very tangible things that will move companies to become more gender neutral and show companies that in a state where 48% of the workforce are women, it's really in our best interest to make sure that they're paid and that they want to stay here and stay a part of the Alaskan community. So I'm very thrilled that we are have the honor of opening this series and these forums. And now I want to pass it over to Tamaya Liebesbach, who is our coordinator of our Women's Economic Empowerment Center.
So as you've heard several times, in Alaska, women earn right around 67 cents to the dollar. If you look at the most recent data from the U.S. Census Bureau for full-time, year-round workers, it's about 67.8%. So we've moved a little bit in those past 3 or 4 years since the Alaska data that we've looked at. And this puts us second to the last in the nation for women's pay. And the gender pay gap for us is really a critical labor force issue for the state. Alaskan companies face huge shortages in labor, and especially when we're looking at talented and skilled labor. You'll hear lots of businesses say, we don't have a labor pool in the state, we have a labor puddle. So when you're looking at this kind of shortage of labor, it's really crucial that companies are trying to recruit all of the talent possible. And that just can't happen in Alaska if women are consistently being paid less. And so for us, closing the gender pay gap is crucial to making progress on this issue, and really crucial to making sure that Alaska's businesses and economy continue to thrive. We need to make sure that we're using that entire labor pool and not just looking at half of it. Human capital is very important when it comes to this issue, and education is a big piece of that human capital. While women have increased their educational attainment, especially here in Alaska, they're just not seeing returns. So a woman who has a bachelor's degree in Alaska earns 63 cents on the dollar compared to a man who has a bachelor's degree. If you're a woman who has a master's degree or higher, on average, you earn $4,000 less per year than a man who has a bachelor's degree. So if you have a master's degree, you earn less on average in Alaska than a man who has a bachelor's degree. And if you're a woman who has a bachelor's degree, you earn almost $8,500 less per year than a man in Alaska who either completed their associate's degree or went to some college but didn't complete a degree. So we have a very highly skilled workforce in many ways that's just not seeing returns to that investment in their education. And this certainly doesn't help attract more skilled labor to Alaska, both in terms of men and women. The highest paying occupation for women in Alaska was physicians and surgeons. And in that occupation, men actually make an average of $62,901 more than women annually. So even in some of the very highest occupations for women, men are making significantly more. And we see that as a problem when businesses are looking to attract skilled labor to some of these occupations. And even in a female-dominated field, in some of those fields, men still earn more. So in nursing, which is a heavily dominated and growing field here in our state, women make up 89% of the workforce, but they still earn only 95% of men's earnings. And so as we see some of these fields growing, it's just a problem that we need to address if we want to make sure that our businesses can get the best talent possible, and that our workforce can grow in the best way possible. So moving on to YWCA's initiative, Hillary talked a little bit about this already, that legislation has proven ineffective. As I said, for us, this is really an economic issue. You know, there was the law passed banning pay discrimination based on sex in 1963. We've seen a lot of legislation since then that said the same thing, but we still have this gap. So that's clearly not working. So our focus, as Hillary said, is really working with businesses and organizations to create that gender-neutral workplace that will benefit both men and women, and to work on educating women and girls about career choice, salary negotiation, and other issues that will allow them to close the gap themselves and for others. So it's really about creating a better place for working Alaskans. And it's not about forcing change through legislation, but about demonstrating to companies the incentives that already exist for them to foster a diverse and equitable workplace. And we feel and we know that this will really benefit our economy in the long run. So our action steps for year one, all of our action steps are kind of organized based on these two pieces of our methodology. So for year one, in terms of educating organizations and leaders, as Hillary touched on, we're working on a Best Alaskan Companies for Working Women survey that we'll pilot with three companies. And I'll go into that in more detail on the next slide. We're also working to obtain 50 endorsements to the initiative. And this piece is really about getting that community involvement, that community support, and getting the buy-in from the businesses who ultimately have the power to make this change and to, you know, create a more equitable place for all of us to work. As far as educating women and girls, we'll have our annual Gender Pay Equity Summit. This is a great event where we bring women leaders and professionals from across the state together to discuss these issues, to discuss our experiences, and to find a path forward that is going to be good for our entire community. And we'll also be creating and providing trainings at the university level and high school level that talk about these issues of women in the workforce and talk about, for high schoolers, the implications of career choice and how do you, you know, go about choosing a career that's going to be fair to you as a man or a woman. And for university level students on salary negotiation and kind of what to expect as you enter your career and how to make sure that you're being paid fairly. So on to our survey. This survey is really the cornerstone of our work. The biggest change that we can make is by working with companies to foster equitable, diverse workplaces. And that's where we'll really see this kind of boost to our economy and boost to women's pay. So the goal of the survey is to measure the gender neutrality of a workplace based on their pay and personnel policies. And so the survey will look both at pay structure and how men and women of different levels are paid within a company, as well as policies in the areas of your workforce composition, recruitment and hiring practices, wage transparency, performance evaluation and promotion, and leave and workplace flexibility. And so we have created kind of this ideal world of here are some of the best gender neutral policies that a company could have. And we want to see what companies have those, what companies don't, and work with those companies to put the policies that they can in place. So the goal is really to incentivize businesses to create these workplaces, to show them why it's going to be better for them, how it can benefit them, and to also give them the tools to assess where they are. You know, gender neutrality, if we talk about it in the workplace, is a spectrum. So where as a company do you fall? Are you really bad? Are you really good? Are you kind of in the middle? So we want to give them the tool to figure out where they are and then to see how they can easily and cost-effectively move forward and implement more gender-neutral policies. And some of these policies are really easy to implement, really inexpensive. You don't have to go and, you know, provide a child care center or suddenly provide 6 months of paid maternity and paternity leave. You can do something as simple as creating a gender-blind process for hiring, where you take names and any gender identifiers off of a resume before you give it to a hiring manager, right? So just take the name off and put a number. That is a great way to remove any unknown bias, to make sure that you're focusing on someone's skills and experience and education and not on something else about them. So we're really going to be working with companies to figure out what are these easy, inexpensive policies that can actually make a huge difference in kind of the culture of their work. So in years 2 and 3, we'll continue to expand the survey to more companies throughout the state with the goal that eventually most companies in Alaska will participate, and we can have a list of the best companies to work for and honor those companies and recognize the important work that they're doing. We'll also be working to create a certification and consultation program that works with those companies on how they can improve the gender neutrality of their policies. So we don't want to tell someone they're not doing a good job, but not give them the tools or resources to make it better. We're really here to be an organization that provides that support. We'll also be working to create an educational program on the gender pay gap for the community at large, because many of you may have walked into this room not knowing much about the issue, and many Alaskans don't know much about the issue. And the more you know, the more you can act, the more you can make change, and the more you can support the work. And we'll also be working to implement an attitudes towards working women survey. This is really to just see what is our current culture as Alaskans when we think about working women. Is it positive? Is it negative? Where are some areas where we might be able to shift that culture and make it, you know, favorable towards closing the gender pay gap? We will also continue to host our Gender Pay Equity Summit, increase provision of the high school and college trainings, and expand both of these things statewide. And we really want to focus on creating a needs assessment for vocational education programs that promote non-traditional careers to girls in the state. Many male-dominated careers are paid at higher rates than female-dominated careers, and many of those careers are non-traditional, may require vocational education or some other path, and girls are often not put on the track to go into some of those careers or not made aware of the benefits of those careers. And so programs that kind of target girls, similar to programs that target girls to go into the STEM field, can make a huge difference in closing some of that occupational segregation that contributes to the gap. And Hillary mentioned that we will be measuring the progress of this initiative in 3-year segments. And so to start, we'll be looking, of course, at the pay gap, male versus female median earnings of full-time workers. We'll also be looking at the percentage of companies that rank as good workplaces for women based on our survey. So we will have criteria that say, are you a good workplace? Are you, you know, okay, or where do you fall? Look at attitudes towards women in the workforce and whether those attitudes are improving, if we are seeing some sort of cultural shift. And look at the percentage of women employed in the male-dominated occupations, again, closing some of that occupational segregation. And so the goal of these outcome measures is to find some way to see if the different factors that contribute to the wage gap are changing, and how are they changing, and are our solutions actually working. So we'll use current data as the baseline and then work in 3-year strategic segments to hopefully move the needle on some of these issues. So our progress to date. As Hillary mentioned, we have been working vigorously to get endorsements for our initiative and get community support from all different areas. We currently have 23 total endorsements. You can see that there are people and businesses from varying sectors, from varying walks of life on this list. And it's important that that continues. It's important that we don't leave out a part of leave out an industry, leave out an occupation, leave out a part of the population, because this is a community impact. This really is an initiative that needs the whole community behind it if we're going to succeed. So we are very pleased with the support that we've gotten so far, and we would love you guys to, you know, work with us to get more endorsements on this list and get more companies involved to support us. We have completed the draft of the survey, and we are in negotiations with a research and evaluation firm to really work with them and make sure that this survey isn't biased, that a firm that's a third party outside of, you know, the YWCA is reviewing this information and kind of ranking companies. And as Hillary said, we'll be beta testing that survey towards the end of our fiscal year in June. We have also worked on putting together our trainings for high school and university students. And both APU and UAA will be hosting those trainings on salary negotiation and kind of career field choice. And we'll also have our gender pay equity summit on May 1st. So we have a lot of different actions. Kind of the bulk of the work is going to be happening in the second half of our year. And we have also been very fortunate to have some great funding support from Providence Health and Services Alaska. They have been a wonderful supporter, both in terms of endorsing the resolution, in terms of being willing to work with us on creating the survey and reviewing the survey, and in terms of giving us $75,000 of funding. So we are very, very thankful to Providence for being so supportive and for being so committed to addressing this issue for their workforce and for everyone else. And that's all right, because I am done giving my overview of the initiative. So I guess the system knew that. And so now we're going to open it up to some questions and discussions. So anything that you guys want to know more about, any comments that you have, Hillary, Dielza, and I can take those questions.
You're listening to Addressing Alaskans with YWCA Alaska CEO Hillary Morgan and YWCA Alaska's Economic Empowerment Center Coordinator Tamaya Liebersbach. Their discussion entitled Closing the Gender Pay Gap, Alaska's Path to Equality, was recorded at Alaska Pacific University and has been shortened for broadcast. For the second half of the program, Morgan and Liebersbach fielded questions from the audience, which we've done our best to summarize. First, Liebersbach responds to a question about reducing gender segregation in employment.
Right. So that can take a lot of different forms. One of the best ways, I think, to touch on that issue is actually to give students a list of careers and the average salary in the career. Because you might not realize that, you know, if you just change your career path a little bit, you can make a lot more. Or that maybe you should think about, you know, a different field than what you originally thought about. So it's not just focused on girls, but it's really looking at not just what do you love, but what do you love, what are the options, and what career field might give you the most return for your investment, because we know that secondary education is not inexpensive. So it's a lot of that. And for us, we currently do kind of career counseling at the YWCA, and our focus is similar. It's really matching your ability, your skills, what you want out of a career to the best career for you. And so when it comes to career field choice, it might be maximizing how much you earn. It might be maximizing, you know, a balance between work and life. But it's making sure that you're aware of all of those options, that you've kind of been able to look at them before you go down one path.
Another audience member asks whether the YWCA has considered the importance of pushing for more management education as a way of giving women more leverage in their careers.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think currently where that piece fits in with what we're doing is in the survey and looking at whether or not companies offer that sort of training and whether or not it's truly offered equally to both men and women, because there have been some studies that show that it's not offered as equally to women as much to women as it is to men. So I think it's critical that businesses provide that resource so that both men and women can have the opportunity to move up within a company or move up within an industry. Absolutely.
An audience member asks whether military members were considered in the research the YWCA conducted.
So all of these statistics exclude federal workers, which for Alaska is unfortunate because we do have, both with military and other work, a huge federal workforce. However, we do have the statistic for the federal workforce in general, which is that in the federal workforce, women earn right around 80 cents to the dollar that men earn. They don't break that down, you know, what is it in the military versus what is it in other pieces of the federal government. But as a whole, that's the pay gap for the federal government. So we do expect that given the large number of federal workers, it might move Alaska's number up a little bit, but it's really hard to say because we don't have the numbers about the male-female breakdown in our state.
Another audience member asks about gender wage gap issues for non-white women and what the YWCA is doing to address these.
Yes, absolutely. And that's one thing we haven't talked much about. We don't have Alaska-specific statistics for this, but nationwide, women of color earn far less than white women. So their pay gap is even greater, which is one issue that we will also be working on. Now, as far as the university training goes, I think the biggest way to address that, for anyone to address the a gap that they might face, is to make sure that they know how to find out what they should be paid. And so it's really critical as you're going into the workforce to do that research to see, you know, someone of my skill level with my experience in this occupation and in this place, what is their general salary? And if you're offered far less than that, to then know how either to negotiate or to know how to say, okay, this company is not valuing me, I need to go somewhere else. And so our approach is really on that education about what should I be paid, so that you know going into it. Because if you don't know and you're offered far less, what can you do? You have to have the information. So that would be our approach.
An audience member asks how receptive local organizations have been to participating in YWCA's initiative.
I would say that we've had mixed reactions. So we have wonderful organizations like APU, Providence, the McDowell Group, who are kind of like, this is a no-brainer. You know, of course we're going to sign the resolution. And we've had other organizations who want to look more internally at their policies, at what they've done before they sign on. And it's good in many ways because it's making them think about this issue. Just asking them to sign the resolution is making them say, do we pay women equally to men in our organization? And so while we've gotten pushback in some places, I think that overall it's been a very positive experience both for us and for those organizations.
The same audience member asks how organizations are approached to participate. YWCA Alaska CEO Hillary Morgan responded, "We apologize for the significant change in audio quality between the two speakers throughout the discussion."
We've had anything from people like, I mean, Don signed it, I don't know, it took him a week or something to get it signed, to organizations that have taken 6 months, and we have gone and presented to steering committees and executive committees and the board once and then the board twice, and have had comments, and I'm not exaggerating, we've had comments where people in some of those committees have said, well, you know, men are stronger. And we're like, yes, we do know that. That's not actually the issue. But the range of perception about even whether the stats are real, you know, like, well, where are you getting these from? And it's like our Alaska Department of Labor, and well, what's their methodology? Well, I don't know. What's the U.S. Census methodology? So it's we're just pretty tenacious, and we just keep going back and just showing the information. And the companies we picked, I don't know, can you move back or you don't have that capability? The companies we picked, really we decided that we wanted to go for sort of the bigger players.
Sure.
So obviously APU, we took it to the University of Alaska, they're working on it. And you know, the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce and the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation, those are big players in the business world. And so we felt if we got their stamp of approval, then other businesses would look at it and say, well, if they said yes, then maybe we'll say yes. So, you know, so that's sort of how we started to do it. We wanted to go for the big players first. And then, you know, there are lots of people now that are just saying, send me the resolution, I want to sign up. So that's how we're gonna proceed, and we're gonna also, we've been talking to BP and Exxon and some of the bigger oil companies as well.
Yeah, I know with like the minimum wage increasing for a lot of companies, it's a current big hit, and the next year it's gonna be another large impact. So talking to them about increasing wages again is probably timing could be.
Well, and I think because of the way we're doing this, which is really, the wage is one issue, but the access to power and the access to the higher echelons mm-hmm. is really just as important. So if you have a law firm and the only way to become partner is you have to put in, you know, 5,000 hours, that for women who are going to have children and going to have to have an interruption of their career, oftentimes women will self-select and they'll sort of take themselves out of the running. But law firms could also create another avenue to become partner. Just because there's only one now doesn't mean that you couldn't create another avenue where maybe you have to bring in 89 clients or right. 700 clients. And then women could do that while they're, sure. you know, at home. So some of it is really just slightly adjusting the fact that the workforce for many, many years was dominated by men, and the systems that were designed for the people who were in the workforce. It wasn't malicious, it was just the way it was designed. So we're really trying to get people to look at those systems and say, just because this is the system that you had doesn't mean this is the only system that you could have. There's maybe another system.
Absolutely.
What kind of response have you gotten from the labor unions?
The labor unions we have not spoken to yet, but I've been talking to people inside of them, and I think that they're going to be very supportive.
And in many ways, when you do talk to unions about this issue, I think that the way they see it is that being unionized helps close the gap. While in the past, breaking unions helped close the gap because it meant that women had access to male-dominated fields. But today, unions often bring some of that pay structure that helps create more transparency and close the gender wage gap. And so we've had good conversations, and I think that those conversations will be positive as we move forward. In other states, that's what individuals have seen.
Another audience member expresses the need to see men educated more on the gender wage gap issue and to support women in their efforts.
We're absolutely going to educate men on this issue. I think the pieces where we might not work as much with men on our salary negotiation, because that's slightly different. But talking about the wage gap, talking about how we can prevent it by putting good HR policies into place, we will talk to anyone who wants to listen about that.
Especially, I've noticed that you were targeting high school students.
Yes.
I mean, we need to start getting people in grade schools and high schools aware of this issue.
So absolutely.
The future decision makers can make the change.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, I agree.
Another audience member brings up the idea that the gender wage gap has to do with women discriminated against to the point that they are overqualified for the jobs they are able to get.
So there's not a lot of research that actually pinpoints those situations. And one thing that often happens if you were discriminated against is that the process and the cost of pursuing that issue is so high to you. The legal burden, the cost of, you know, any legal advice falls on the person who's discriminated against until they win their suit. And so you don't see very many documented cases where people have gone through that process. I think a lot of it is anecdotal evidence. So there's not very much hard evidence or hard research on that issue.
The same audience member asks whether the YWCA plans to lobby for any sort of state board to help achieve gender equality in pay.
No, we'll probably take the fifth on that. I mean, you know, it's a 10-year initiative, so
sure.
So we knew that if we started this as a political entity, it would be dead before it got off the ground, right? Now, 5 years down the road, 6 years down the road, if there's a piece of legislation that will dramatically assist this effort, I can't imagine that we're not going to be doing some advocacy on the side to make that happen. We just don't, we don't want this to be a political issue. We want this to be an economic issue.
And I think that from our perspective, one of the other reasons why we aren't actively pursuing that option right now is that to truly create some of the lasting change that we'd like to see, it's not just about going after companies in a negative way who may have discriminated in the past. I don't think that you'll see those companies be very willing to change if that's the only route that you take. And so our focus right now is to really create those positive incentives for companies to change and to work with them in that way to show them how inexpensive it is for them to improve their policies versus how expensive it might be to defend a lawsuit in the future or to, you know, not be able to attract the qualified labor that they need. And so that's our current approach to that issue.
Another audience member asks what the YWCA is doing to work with women in the workforce currently.
So we have, under the Women's Economic Empowerment Center, one of our programming areas is career enhancement. We have a salary negotiation course that's available. We have kind of a career planning course for how do you change your career, how do you get, as well as, you know, classes if you need help with your resume and that sort of thing. And I work a lot with women one-on-one on this issue. I actually had an appointment today. And what you're talking about is called the sticky floor, where you go in an entry-level position and you just can't move past it. And so the best approach, in my opinion, is to work with an individual on an individual basis on that, because it has so much to do with what you're looking for in your job, what your skill set is, and that sort of thing. But we do have classes for that. We do work with women on that currently. So you can always come and see me.
Another audience member asks how YWCA is addressing difficulties women have with employment interrupters like taking maternity leave.
So again, that's kind of a piece of our survey. Like I said, it's the biggest, the kind of bulk of the work we're doing is looking at the survey. And one of the pieces that really helps that, I mean, you have kind of a cultural norm that women are the individuals who stay home when there's a child to take care of that child, which of course is perpetuated by the fact that women often earn less, and so that's the fiscal decision that makes sense. But companies offering, you know, the same amount of maternity as paternity leave and encouraging their male employees to take advantage of that maternity leave is an easy way that we can move to kind of shift that norm and just create more gender equity. This is something that's been done in a lot of different countries. In Sweden, for example, there are companies where the men are actually required to take the same amount of paternity leave as the women, with the goal of creating the same career interruption for the man as you have for the woman. I don't know that, you know, we would ever go to that extreme in the US, but having that offered is really important. And so for us, it's not just policies that are good for mothers, it's policies that are gender neutral and good for families. And so I think that's a big way to address that issue is, you know, there's gonna be a career interruption somewhere. Let's make sure it's an equal choice, that the man has an equal opportunity to stay home with his child and the woman has an equal opportunity to continue her career.
And finally, another audience member asks how you can ensure that organizations actually live up to their values concerning gender equality.
As an outside organization, it's hard to measure that. We were just talking about this today, actually. You know, you can look at, does the policy exist? But how do you, in a positive way, look at whether or not that policy is truly a reflection of the culture within a company? So maybe you have paternity leave, but does anyone use it? If no one uses it, then that tells us a little bit about the culture of that company. So that's one way that as an outside organization, we can see, does your talk, you know, kind of match your walk? Do your policies, are they just there to look good, or are they actively being used and actively being encouraged within your company? So that's one way we can look at it. I think that as an organization, to actually change, what you really need are kind of two things. You need a leader who's willing to change, who sees that change is important. And in many ways, you need some sort of crisis, which I see as this kind of labor shortage that we're increasingly facing in the state, to push you in that direction. And I think that in many ways, as companies realize that they need to adapt to a changing workforce, that they need to adapt to attract more labor to Alaska, that some of these policies will be a no-brainer for them to be able to do that. And so while they might not be changing them because it's the right thing to do, if it's what they need to do, we're happy if that's how they get there as well.
And yes, so we were just talking about that very issue today with the researchers, and I think that we're probably going to end up putting something into the survey to really determine whether, you know, if you, I just moved back here from New York City, and there are lots of companies that give you vacation, but if you actually try to take it, they're just like, what, you just went to New Jersey for the weekend, you took a vacation. And so it's offered, but you really, the culture is that you're not supposed to take it. And so, as Tamiya said, that if there is a lots of policies about promoting women to higher levels of authority, and yet there's no women at higher levels of authority, then we'll be able to see that it's not that the policy is not an actual culture representation.
You've been listening to Addressing Alaskans with YWCA Alaska CEO Hillary Morgan and YWCA Alaska's Economic Empowerment Center Coordinator Tamiya Liebersbach. Their discussion, entitled Closing the Gender Pay Gap, Alaska's Path to Equality, was recorded at Alaska Pacific University on February 19th and was shortened for broadcast. Thanks for joining us today on Addressing Alaskans. I'm your host and producer, Evan Erickson.
Addressing Alaskans is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Theme music is by Patrick Lee. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to our website at alaskapublic.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. Learn more about Addressing Alaskans and listen online at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.